Hello, everyone. This is Susie Ward welcoming you to another Matthew and Friends. I think most of you know that I'm Matthew's mother and that our telepathic connection has produced 60-some messages on my site, www.matthewbooks.com, and the four Matthew books. But if you are a new listener and you would like to read our story, it's on that website, too, and a shorter version is in the Matthew and Friends section of BBS Radio. One of the main subjects that Matthew has talked about all along, and many others in spirit and in physical worlds have also sent the same information to their receivers, is that the long-time cover-up about extraterrestrials will be exposed and the truth about our space family will become known worldwide. Our off-planet sources have told us that some of our space family members are living among us right now, and they are looking forward to the time when they can introduce themselves for who they really are. Others are living in the hollow Earth, and millions are surrounding our planet in their spacecraft. And I think by now almost everyone has some belief of that presence, at least. Anyway, all of these people and myriad others in our universal family have been helping Earth and us in numerous ways for many decades. Some people on our planet do know this. Alfred Weber is one of them. Alfred was my guest on my September program. He's in the vanguard of the visionaries or futurists, they're also known that way, who are laying the groundwork for our cooperative relationship with spiritually, intellectually, and technologically advanced civilizations. Now, Alfred also is at the forefront of the Citizens International War Crimes Tribunal. When he was with us in September, he talked about the tribunal, whose objective is to bring truth, reconciliation, and restorative justice to our world. He had intended to talk about exopolitics then, too, but the time sped by, and it ran out before he could tell us about that. Exopolitics is the movement that he founded for establishing a cooperative government between us and other civilizations. And I'm so pleased that Alfred was willing to come again today so he can tell us about that movement. If you would like to ask him questions, please call our toll-free numbers. This is what they are. In the United States, 877-876-5227. And for our listeners in Canada, the number is 888-815-9756. And now it's my great pleasure and honor to welcome back the founder of Exopolitics, international attorney, author, and lecturer, Alfred Weber. Hi, Alfred. Thank you for coming back today.
Susie, I'm really happy to be back with you. And, you know, as you were just speaking, you presented the picture of our globe being shared by a larger cosmic family in such a crystal clear and inviting way that it's truly exciting. And there's just, you know, there's just the slightest layer of I would call it, let's see, there's just the slightest barrier that we have to cross between now and between what you just painted and reaching that absolute clarity from our present situation? We're just almost there.
Okay, excuse me. Are you talking about time-wise, linear time? Or are you talking about something else that needs to happen?
Well, now that's even more of an interesting comment and a very interesting way to put it. Because our human civilizations coming of awareness that we live in a populated universe and coming into an active relationship with ethical, advanced, upper dimensional civilizations will also require a deep shift in our own state of being and our own consciousness. As they say, you can't get there from here. But what is very interesting about the science of exopolitics, and we can define it as the political science of outer space. Actually, in January of 2006, the Associated Press reported that exopolitics had been chosen for Word of the Year of 2005. So we're starting to make it into the mainstream culture. And what it means is the science of relations between our culture and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. But you're quite right. Meeting up with other advanced, upper-dimensional, ethical civilizations is not quite like going, say, and having a diplomatic meeting between the United States and France, or between Canada and Peru, or between the Native American nation and and a South Pacific nation, say the Hawaiian peoples the nation, because each of those occupies roughly the same dimension of time and space. And as we know, we on this planet now are in the midst of an evolutionary shift, a shift in the dimension of our energy out of a period where what we can call the permanent war economy, or a form of social organization which has always been centered around war and always centered and focused on this planet alone, will be shifting toward a more universal focus. And we would have gotten there much sooner but for barriers that have been placed in our way. And it appears that those barriers are now beginning to lift. And it's a very complex story as to how humanity had those barriers placed on it in the first place and why those barriers are lifting now. And that's part of the story of exopolitics. In other words, what's our history? What's our true history in the past? And what is our history going to be in the future? Because if you look at it from an historical point of view, what may be the most profoundly historical fact is that the Earth and human society is now relinking up with Universal Society. Not that we're linking up for the first time. Exopolitics allows us to see ourselves as part of a larger continuum in a multidimensional universe, as part of a universe that is highly populated, organized under, filled with intelligent civilizations that are organized under universal law and are mediated by some form of universe politics, and we now are once again becoming aware of our being in a populated universe. And the barriers that have kept us from that are beginning to fall. Some of them are imposed barriers from within, barriers like elites that have for their own profit wanted to keep the large majority of humanity asleep and ignorant about a populated universe so that they could profit sort of the status quo of the petroleum nuclear civilization. Some of the barriers are actually from without, because for the last 200,000 or 300,000 years, we've been, apparently, there's some evidence, we'll have to check this out further, under some form of a universe quarantine or separation from the rest of the universe because of events that may have taken place on this quadrant of the galaxy many, many years ago, thousands of years ago, something like a rebellion against universe governance. So we're in a rich historical period now, and exopolitics provides a map for the human race to follow. It first burst on the scene in the year 2000 at a scholarly conference held at the University of Wyoming, chaired by Professor Leo Sprinkle, where I was able to give the keynote address there on exopolitics. My book on exopolitics had just been published there. And I like to call exopolitics something like the yam. I used to call it a banana, but it's the yam that the 100 monkeys wash. And that whole theory comes from the concept that if you have enough monkeys on an island doing a certain thing like washing their yams, well, there's a meme or there's a thought form put out into the morphogenic field or into the mind field of this new way of doing things. So pretty soon, all of the monkeys on all of the islands start washing their yams. So what happened in the year 2000 is that the meme or the concept of exopolitics was put out into the world of a political science, of an orderly way, of a model which was different from the 20th century model of science, which held that all intelligent life ends at Earth's geostationary orbit. And what the exopolitics model provides is just the obverse of that, that we live in a universe filled with intelligent civilizations operating under universal law mediated by universe politics. And so it was like exopolitics functioned like a cosmic trigger. And starting with the year 2000, a whole acceleration has started to take place. Governments have started to release their formerly top secret data on on their monitoring of extraterrestrial craft, starting with the government of Brazil, the government of Mexico, the government of Peru, moving up to this year, in March of this year, very quickly. We launched our programs on March 10th, 2007, and just a couple of weeks afterward, on March 23rd, the government of France announced it was releasing all of its secret data on extraterrestrial craft, and 6 weeks after that, the government of the UK announced that. And going back to the year 2000, starting in May of 2001, the Disclosure Project brought together 20 or more high-ranking government, political, and other figures who were able to give testament to the extraterrestrial presence, and then this was led by other high-ranking government officials later on, including Paul Hellyer, the former Minister of Defense of Canada, in 2005, Governor Fife Symington in March, second week of March, right before France, went public that 10 years before, when he was governor of Arizona, and there was the Phoenix Lights craft, a sighting of a craft 2 miles wide. Well, he actually saw that, and so he came and recanted publicly in March of this year, and that's since been followed and accelerated in our U.S. presidential primaries. First with Rudy Giuliani, who was asked by an eight-year-old boy what he would do if there were bad ETs and extraterrestrial invasion. You know, of course, feeding into that false flag kind of negative ET stuff, which is a setup for a second 9/11. And he had no hesitation saying, are we going to be ready? Then followed with Dennis Kucinich, who the actress Shirley MacLaine, a friend of his, said that he saw a UFO. I'll call it UFO because it's unclear as to whether that's an extraterrestrial vehicle or what they call an ARV, alien reproduction vehicle. In other words, a human vehicle made by U.S. military intelligence or some other agency based on back-engineered extraterrestrial principles that was monitoring him at Shirley MacLaine's house. And just last night, Dennis Kucinich declared on national television during the presidential debate, he says, yes, I did see a UFO. And now, just a week before that, another presidential candidate, Governor Bill Richardson, was asked directly about this at a speech of his in Austin, Texas. And he came forward and said that if he were elected, he would work to make all of these secrets public. So since the launching of the exopolitics model, there's been a tremendous acceleration of the place of sort of a paradigm shift, kind of a participatory paradigm shift. The more one interacts with extraterrestrials and the extraterrestrial dimension, the more it interacts with you. And so that's why we believe that the coming of the exopolitics model has served to introduce a new factor into the equation to serve as a bridge, kind of a conceptual bridge, to allow humanity to go inside its mind and in its understandings where it has not been able to venture before.
Well, that is all such good news, that such high-level people are now acknowledging that yes, there are extraterrestrials, at least around us. They're not saying yet, yes, they're right here among us, but at least around us. I just want to make a comment on what you call the yam instead of the banana. And the thought that came to me when you said you're calling it yam is that the yam is a root, and what we're doing now is getting down to the root of things. We're dislodging the truth that has been hidden, not necessarily underground, but still the roots are being shaken and brought up. I'm just curious, is that what made you think of yam?
Well, no, there's a model or kind of a standard story put out about the 100 monkeys, and that.
Oh, I do know that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you deviated from the banana.
Right, and I used to say if it's the 100 monkeys washing their bananas, and then someone in the audience at James Gilliland's ranch came up to me and said, "Oh, it's not bananas, it's yams." So I said, "Well, okay."
Oh, really? Well,
yeah.
I've heard that story many, many times, and it's always been bananas.
Right, me too. So I didn't even know that monkeys ate yams.
Well, I didn't know that either. But at any rate, I do have a more important question to ask you than that. Are you working with any extraterrestrials that you know are extraterrestrials, either those who are living here or those who visit? And because I know that there are some who just visit. They manifest bodies just like ours. Well, those who are living among us obviously do. And then they go back to, you know, wherever they came from. So,
now,
are you working with any?
Well, that's a very good question, Susie. And I'm going to answer it this way, because when we first started out in this work, Dr. Cal Rosin, who's my co-director at the Institute for Cooperation in Space, ISIS, and I agreed that we would keep our personal experiences with extraterrestrials out of the picture. Because then it would become about us. That was at the beginning when we first started doing this work. Because interaction with extraterrestrials can be such a subjective thing, and it's so difficult to prove via the scientific method that it tends to draw a great deal of subject-object confusion. And so in my work, I've taken the position in public commentary of a futurist, and that is dealing with the evidence that is available in the public domain and proceeding from that. Now, having said that, Dr. Rosin, Carol, violated our rule a few months ago when she went on the Jeff Rentz show, as you may know, and described her experiences with extraterrestrial beings who with witnesses in this case a very well educated and evolved psychiatrist who served as a witness met with her in connection with our Peace in Space work. And so you can say that our work in moving the agenda of no weapons in space and the Space Preservation Treaty, and in moving our mission for the peaceful uses of space and for cooperation amongst life form in the universe, which is what our work is about, is being, you know, we follow the advice and input of all of the stakeholders. And as you just stated at the beginning of this program, the extraterrestrials and the ultra-terrestrials and the intra-terrestrials are all stakeholders in this large experience that we call Terra or Earth or Gaia. And so, since my co-director has now stated it as a matter of record, well, yes, we have had experiences with advanced ethical extraterrestrial beings, one of which was witnessed, but the very advanced medical physician, a psychiatrist who witnessed the whole thing, and regarding our peace in space work, and we now are moving toward moving toward a space preservation treaty signing. For example, just over the past few days, one of the president of one of the South American countries, Ecuador, has agreed to help us sponsor the Space Preservation Treaty signing, which is to bring together nations, the signatories of progressive nations, to sign the Space Preservation Treaty banning weapons in space, to prohibit warfare and weapons in space. So that's part of the very real and concrete third dimensional or transitional task that we have to help transform the permanent war economy that this now grips this planet into a sustainable, peaceful, cooperative space age society.
It does seem that the U.S. government, especially, is committed to a permanent wartime situation, and I'm wondering if you have encountered opposition from any people in our government or any of the corporations that so handsomely profit from supplying a war machine.
Well, if we look at the permanent war economy, it's all structural, and there are various layers of it. And the whole system of nations now is set up to carry out war as an industry. The essence of the permanent war economy is that war is an industrial activity, and so the methodology of creating and controlling and profiting from war is to control both sides of the Hegelian dialectic of enemies. You control enemy A against enemy B. So you fund both sides. You fund enemy A and give them arms, and you fund enemy B and give them arms, so they fight each other, destroy each other, and they need more arms, and you profit off the middle. The classic example is John D. Rockefeller, who made $1 trillion off of World War I, which was a manipulated war, World War I, which was the war to end all wars, which caused untold suffering, happened only because a handful of individuals from two or three small families namely the Rothschilds, who presently control about $100 trillion worth of banking interests, and the Rockefellers wished it to happen so that they could make more money. Basically, the whole system of nations is a shell game, and nations, presidents, governments, as they're currently constituted, act as shells, or you could call it as barroom bouncers for the deeper financial interests that make money off of the permanent war economy. And if you trace it back, the parties that run the United States, the corporate parties and the government of the United States, the last thing that they have in mind is the welfare of the people of the United States. In fact, their goal right now, the goal of the government of the United States, is to destroy the people of the United States, to destroy the economy of the United States, and to destroy the land of the United States. And in that goal, they're succeeding brilliantly. Why? Because the leaders of the United States, in the form of President George W. Bush and Vice President Richard B. Cheney, who were contemporaries of mine at Yale, they are beholden to the City of London. The City of London is a quasi-independent jurisdiction at the heart, at the center of London, England. It's a 677 quasi-independent jurisdiction ruled over by 12 banks. Even the Queen of England has to ask formal permission to enter the City of London, which she does following the mayor of the City of London and only with certain specified retinue and dress. And that's ruled by a committee of 12 banks headed up by the Bank of England but mediated by the House of Rothschild. And as I mentioned, they control $100 trillion. And their agents in North America, the House of Rockefeller, controls $10 trillion. So this whole planet is, in essence, puppets or slaves for the House of Rothschild and the House of Rockefeller. Now, what's the connection between the House of Rothschild and exopolitics and the House of Rockefeller and exopolitics? Well, if you begin to trace it back, you'll see that in the post-World War II era, there were different groups of extraterrestrials who approached the U.S. government who had developed nuclear weapons, financed and pushed by the Skull and Bones Brotherhood of Death Rockefeller interests, the City of London interests, and there were different groups of extraterrestrials. The Nordics came, and what's very interesting is that this is a magical universe, Susie, you know, and the Nordics who met with Eisenhower could actually have been insectoids taking on a blonde Nordic form to make us humans feel good. And praying mantis extraterrestrials, insectoids instead of mammals, are actually quite evolved and quite spiritually evolved, much more than us humans. I know it's difficult for us to kind of accept that, and it makes you feel queasy because we mammals are taught to be so queasy around insects.
And you are so right. We are taught that. And one of a representative from one of these vast and powerful and just so far advanced from us that we really can't even comprehend it, sent me an image of himself. And he said, it's not really pleasing that you think of us as insects, but... that is your image, so I accept it. But, I mean, the love that I could even feel while that that soul, because we're all souls, was talking with me, because I can feel their energy. Their energy has, a considerable impact on my body. So I do know that. And you're right, we are taught that insects are bad and, you know, eek, there's a spider and that sort of thing. All part of such an elaborate web of darkness. And now all of these, the barriers that you explained, and thank you for doing that, because I had jotted down the question, I had jotted down a lot of notes, and I didn't interrupt, and you answered all of my little questions. They weren't little questions, they were big questions, but little notes here.
But you know, Susie, we must be on the same mind frequency then, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's no question. No question about it, Alfred. I know that you have worked with Michael Sala also.
Yes, yes.
I have heard Michael speak at one of James Gilliland's conferences.
Yes.
And he was a guest on We the People teleconference. And he was quite open about his awareness of the extraterrestrials who have come here. I guess you could, they're not really walk-ins. Okay, in some cases they are, because I know some of them. But in other cases, they simply come here, and they need a period of adjustment. Michael spoke of these as similar to our halfway houses for rehabilitation. While they are adjusting to third density bodies, becoming at ease with walking, they know our languages. I mean, we're talking about brilliant souls here, but they practice speaking, so they can pick up slang expressions and. In other words, they will just blend in. This seems like an assumption. Well, it is an assumption. But I am thinking that you probably are aware of these individuals, too, and maybe have even talked with some, given some pointers, perhaps. Did I put you on the spot there?
Well, no, I'm trying to search my memory banks here. Each of us works in different areas of specialty. For example, as I just mentioned, Carol Rosen works in a particular area of specialty. And I have had my own experiences, but I'm not prepared to. I made a decision not to use them as part of the data on which I take my positions, because I find that currently I still run into what I call the subject-object or the observer uncertainty principle, and However, I deal with a lot of individuals who do interact directly with extraterrestrials in the course of my work. It's a field that we call public interest diplomacy with off-planet cultures. That is something that I feel very comfortable talking about. I don't feel comfortable. I my own direct experiences with extraterrestrials and with ultra-dimensionals, other than, for example, the experiences that I've had at various portals, such as, you know, public portals, such as the James Gilliland Ranch out there at the foot of Mount Adams in Washington State, where you can see them on film, and there are many witnesses to these, including many engineers from Boeing and scientists and thousands of replicable observations of what appear to be intelligently guided ultra-dimensional spacecraft. And observers who have even seen spacecraft come down with multicolored lights and, you know, all things of this sort. I have witnessed multidimensional spacecraft of this sort. And I've had my own interactions with ultra-dimensional and extra-dimensional intelligence, but not of a sort that I bring it and I rely on it as public evidence. Mm.
Yes, I understand why you're doing this. And it makes it does make sense, because you exopolitics is well, it was formed for 3D, to move us out of 3D. So I can understand that you are putting this on the basis of what everybody could relate to if they hear about it, rather than your personal feelings or acquaintances. And well, you're unlike me, because everything that I have put out, all the information that I have put out, has come from extraterrestrials. So the only thing I'm doing that's 3D is disseminating this, putting it in book form or on the internet.
Right.
And you're in a totally different realm of moving us forward.
Right, right. And there are different ways. You see, there are, I think, different ways of interacting with the intelligence of the universe. The universe possesses an intelligence which doesn't necessarily have to be in a living corporeal form. There is an intelligence inherent in nature itself. And one can obtain ultra-dimensional intelligence simply by there can be a transfer of extraterrestrial intelligence to us humans simply through the process of internal channeling.
Matthew, that sort of fits. Well, it does fit in.
You know, I mean, put it this way: one doesn't necessarily have to be a formal channeler. That is where you sit, and people ask one questions, and then you know, something comes through. One can actually operate as an individual in the world, and there's constant flow coming from other dimensional sources into you, and it's just open, and you're just walking around in the world channeling.
Absolutely. What you are saying is really what I've heard from a number of my sources, because there is no separation.
Right.
That everything in the cosmos, not just our universe, but the cosmos, is energy,
right,
fluctuating at one frequency or another. And there is no separation of this mass intelligence where individuals separate themselves only by what they... We place limits upon ourselves by what we deem as our reality, and of course that is formed by what we think and what we're taught, and when we can leave that sort of box-type living and open our minds, the awareness grows, and there is this connection, this flow that you're talking about. And it is accessible to every one of us. No one is excluded.
Exactly. Exactly.
From what you have experienced and what you have heard from others, do you feel that... you say the intra, ultra, and extraterrestrials. Are they satisfied with the pace of our progress, our consciousness raising? I know you said it could have happened long ago if. Well, we're dealing with today because that force that wanted to continue to control us, just went right ahead against all of the guidance of the wise and loving off-planet sources. But since we are escaping from that now, and this shift is happening, are the souls that you are aware of satisfied with the response that we hear on Earth, well, with our response?
Well, to address that question, the one word that I keep on coming back to is the word satisfied. Because I think that looking at our dimension, which is in time, from upper dimensional sources, which are more in light and in love, as the dimensional frequencies that define them. For example, looking at a fifth to sixth dimensional civilization, as opposed to third and lower fourth dimensional civilization, which we are. If you look at, from what I've understood, reading of, say, from Arcturian sources of six upper fifth and six dimensional sources, the dimensions that primarily define the fifth and sixth dimensions are the dimensions of light and love, which we don't necessarily define as dimensions now even.
That's for sure.
You know, we think, well, God is light, God is love, light is the plenum, it's the force of everything, you know, love is the force of everything, and yet the remote viewers who go to the sixth dimension and come back within the scientific mode tell us that cosmic love, that we can call agape, is somehow the glue that keeps the entire universe together. So we're down in the third dimension, which we can call the time-space dimension. So we're sort of, our glue down here seems to be time and space. And we seem to have little use for love and light.
Well, fortunately, we're becoming unglued.
Right.
So maybe you have also heard this, that third density is a huge spectrum and a really, really tough one to get out of because of the, well, all that we consider evil or negative or dark, whatever word there, thrives here. So it is really a difficult dimension to transfer across from lower, where we were, to upper, and then get out of it entirely to move into fourth. Have you heard that?
Yes, right. You see, when you said, are they satisfied, the phrase that comes to me is you can't break the law, you can only break yourself against the law. So it's not that anyone outside of ourselves is satisfied or not, it's how are we progressing according to the stratifications of spiritual law? Because we're held here by spiritual law. And that's the significance of the dimensional shift that is occurring now. Now, what some say is that we're actually coming to a stratification, even a bifurcation, in the consciousness or in actual. So some say there are actually two planet Earths now, a third density planet and a fifth density planet. And that we're actually living on two different planets now, simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And as each day goes by and as the frequencies increase, as we approach the galactic center, the planets are moving more and more apart. And so this stratification is going to increase, and eventually beings and a certain element, there'll be a splitting, and there'll be a new planet, which is a third density planet, and a certain spectrum of souls will go off with that on a new journey to work out their things, and then another sector of the current inhabitants will go up to the upper dimensional planet to evolve in that way, and that's part of the process that's ongoing now. Now, there are a lot of different models like that at the intuitive level feel, hey, gee, there's something to that. That one reads from many of the dimensional channel sources, and that can have a lot of resonance at the subjective level and can help guide one. Whether or not there's objective truth or not, we'll see. But from an individual point, it's clear that the only way out is up.
Well, true. Indeed. And some of us, fortunately, are doing that. Alfred, we're almost out of time again. I'm going to mention my next guest briefly, and then you will have 1 minute only. I wish there were more. But can you just tell us in a minute what we can do to become good intergalactic citizens, and I'll get right back to you.
Okay.
My guest, November 28th, will be Charlotte King. Charlotte predicts geophysical events worldwide with amazing accuracy. She has been administered many, many tests by scientists in that field and also physicians. And those tests show that she is extraordinarily sensitive to Earth's electromagnetic field, and her hearing range is far more extensive than normal. So be sure to tune in November 28th. And now, Alfred, 1 minute. Please give your website, too.
Sure. Well, I'll start off by giving the website.
Okay,
and that is, it's www.exopoliticsradio.com. And that will lead you into a world of exopolitics, which I think you'll find very interesting. If you want to read my book, which I recommend, you can go to Amazon.com and get it there.
And what is the name of your book?
It's called Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. And it's a book that gave birth to the field of exopolitics. And it also has a very interesting cosmic history on its own, which one day will become known publicly.
Alfred, I've been watching the time, and we're out of time. So may I just wrap this up by saying that reading your book, going to your site and reading what is there, that will prepare us to be good intergalactic citizens. Is that a fair thing to say?
Hey, yes, because I'm present there. You will hear me talking about on Exopolitics Radio all of the things that you're talking about, and it's know thyself and to thy own self be true.
Thank you so much for being with us again today, Alfred. I really adore you, and I am so grateful to you for what you are doing. Matthew and I send blessings to you and to Jerry and to all of our listeners. So goodbye for now, and thank you again, Alfred.
Great.
Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.